FSM. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Abby Lay.
And I'm Tad Moore. My voice cracked. And I'm Tad Moore.
And you guys probably don't remember us because you haven't seen us in the nine months.
It's me, Tad, from church. Remember?
Your good friends, Tad and Abby.
Yeah.
Hey, and we are here to bring you another in the series of LSD podcasts. And Tad, what does LSD stand for again?
Love, sex, and dating.
Oh.
Why did I say it like that?
I don't know.
Anyway, now this is exciting to be on the podcast with you, Abby. For those of you that might not know us, I'm on staff at the Fayetteville campus.
And I'm on staff at the Rogers campus.
And Abby and I have been friends since our college days back at the U of A.
Oh, go Hogs, am I right?
Go Hogs. We're both from Rogers.
We go way back.
One of the greatest cities in Northwest Arkansas.
We were both English majors, right? So bet you guys are jealous of what good friends Tad and I are.
We're such good pals. And today we're going to pick up and talk about the next section of our LSD series on sex, which is going to be awkward and fun. So buckle up your seatbelts.
Yeah, and don't turn off the podcast yet.
Because we got some things to say.
We're going to say some stuff. You're going to hear it. And I don't know if anybody's going to like it.
But let's get started.
Yeah, and before we really jump into this podcast, I would say, FSM students, if you're new here, if this is your first time listening to the podcast, put us on pause and go back and listen to the podcast that Hunter and Caroline did on love, because in this series, Love, Sex, and Dating, love comes first, and it is going to help establish a really good framework for what Tad and I are going to be talking about. I personally don't believe that we can really understand this conversation unless we start with a healthy and accurate understanding of what love is, what the Bible says about love, and ultimately where our love and fulfillment is supposed to come from anyway. So put us on pause, go and listen to the love podcasts. They are good stuff. You don't want to miss any of Hunter's just gut-busting jokes.
If you have already listened to the love podcast, then
you're in the right place.
You're in the right place. Here we go.
So, Tad, I just think that, you know, in this conversation about sex, I would say, listeners, get comfortable. We're going to be saying the word sex a lot, so don't think it's too awkward. We're all uncomfortable. But, you know, our culture tells us a lot about sex. We see just different perspectives being thrown at us from every angle, whether it's social media or marketing campaigns, the shows that we watch, the commercials that maybe you see on Hulu Live. Does anybody watch commercials anymore?
As often as possible, I try to avoid it.
Yeah, I would say that we as a culture have really moved away from TV commercials. I prefer to not view them. But Tad, back on our real topic, which is not commercials, what would you say are media, social media, television, what are some of the messages that that our culture is telling us about sex?
I think a lot of the things in our culture try to paint the picture that sex is one of the most important aspects of life, and that it's this thing that defines you. It has a lot to, I think a lot of our culture is pointing to either whether your sexual orientation or whether or not you've experienced sex or not defines a lot of your value and is one of the most important things about you. And that can get really confusing a lot, but I think that's what I see a lot in our culture and the way that sex is handled.
Yeah. I think that we see a lot of mixed signals in culture of either sex being this really taboo thing that you shouldn't talk about and is bad, or almost being an obsession. And really, I think one direction our culture has gone is almost this like anything goes mentality. I think you see it in music and in movies and TV. It makes me think of that that Ariana Grande song, which, fun fact, Ariana Grande is Tad's favorite musical artist.
Mm-hmm. That's a funny fact.
It's a funny fact.
It's just a little silly fact. Not even a fact. It's just funny.
But it reminds me of that song where she is she just says, I want it, I got it. And I think that that's a lot of times our mentality, or at least cultures of almost this, you do you, anything goes, whatever you want, you just go out and get it mentality. And I think that those effects can be really devastating. When we follow that mentality to its end, the effect that it has on our lives can be really devastating. But what are some of the lies that you see us believing that just come from how our culture handles this?
Oh yeah, I think you kind of hit on it a little bit. There's almost two ditches that I think I see in a lot of the ways that this is handled. On one hand, as you kind of alluded to, this attitude of sex is dirty and bad and shouldn't be talked about. It's embarrassing and it's very taboo. And so you kind of get like one swing to the end of the spectrum is that it should just be totally avoided. And I think that causes people a lot of shame. I think that causes a lot of uncomfortability. It leaves us really uneducated on how to approach the topic of sex and how it should be enjoyed or lived out as a believer. But then on the other side of the spectrum, maybe the other ditch you could say would be that this totally unrestrained sexuality is good, and that putting any sort of restriction on your sexual urges is wrong and confining, and it should be avoided. And so, like you said, so much of our culture says like just anything goes. You should do what feels good, and if that's having sex in the way that makes you happiest, then you should do that. Whatever makes you feel the best is the most important thing. But that doesn't really work. And whenever you chase that to its end, it actually, I think, can cause a lot of damage whenever you live that mentality out, that just anything goes. We shouldn't have any sort of sexual restrictions in our lives.
Yeah. And I think I'm sure that you guys listening or us on staff, so many of us have in one way or another just experienced that hurt that comes from honestly either end of the spectrum, whether it be the shame on the one side of sex as a whole, or this unrestrained kind of self-serving sexuality. And I'm sure a lot of people, if you ask them, that's a part of their story with the Lord and a part of their testimony. And I think that what's exciting in talking about all of this is getting to look at the truth that we serve a God who not only cares about all of this, but who also heals and restores, that in everything there is healing and restoration to be had. But that this damage really that is brought on by a lack of restriction, or kind of this idea of like, well, I have a right, you know, it's my body. And we hear that all the time. I have this right because it's only about me, when in reality it's not. But the joy in all of it is, even in the pain, it's not final. There's so much more in this conversation.
Oh, absolutely. And I love it. I mean, myself and friends I have, I think could speak to the way that, because we're so confused about what sex is supposed to be and the way that we're supposed to engage with it, it does cause a lot of damage. And again, you play out both of those ditches. If you buy into this idea that sex is something that should be completely restricted and restrained, then any sort of sexual feeling or desire you have can only lead to just feeling of shame and isolation and frustration. And then on the other side, you play out that idea of just no restrictions at all, completely unrestrained sexuality. There's no concern for the other in that view. And I think that, yes, this sounds extreme, but you play that out and that gives excuse for the types of sexual behavior that we see that are repulsive, like rape, molestation, pornography use, sexual slavery. All of that, it buys in entirely. It's the full acceptance of there should be no restriction. Sex is only about personal fulfillment and gratification. And that gives no sort of view for the other, which is completely unchristlike. Who led us in what love really is selflessly giving of yourself to other people and not taking from them. And I think it's a passage that comes to mind actually with this that I think we'll get into more, but just to kind of break in with Abby, acknowledging the fact that this has caused maybe harm for even some of you listening, would want you to turn to 1 Thessalonians 4. And Paul's talking to the Thessalonian church, and He says this. He says, this is the will of God, your sanctification, that you abstain from sexual immorality, that each one of you know how to control his own body in holiness and honor, not in the passion of lust like the Gentiles who do not know God. And then listen to this. He says, see that no one transgresses or wrongs his brother in this matter of sexuality. Mm-hmm. And then he says, because the Lord is an avenger in all these things, as we told you beforehand and warned you. And so I would just want to offer that one as just a point of care, that if you have been hurt or harmed in any area of sexuality from either of those ditches, that people have shamed you and you've got a distorted view of sexuality because of that, or if someone's hurt you sexually, know that God has seen that, and we have this promise in Scripture that God will avenge that. And I think that that is one of the pieces of Scripture that talks to God's justice that I think is really beautiful, that God does not let that slide. He will avenge and justify those who have been hurt in this way, and that's a promise we can cling to. But moving on, we want to talk about, what does the Bible say about sexuality, and how do we actually live as believers in that?
Absolutely. And I think that's so good. And I love that we get to take this thing that the Lord intended for good and man has twisted into something that can be really harmful and hurtful. But our prayer is that all of you walk away with a greater understanding of God's intended design. So, Tad, I would love you to kind of jump a little bit more into these ideas of the restricted versus the unrestrained sexuality. What does that mean? What does that look like? And honestly, from my perspective, like when I hear those, I think it sounds super black and white, which means that we might be losing some listeners because we don't always love hearing just black and white. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, there are a lot of Tiger King tweets out there to be looking at while you're listening to this podcast. And yeah. I want to do everything we can to avoid the multitasking of Tiger King.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, speaking of Tiger King, talking about unrestrained sexuality, that, if you've been watching that show, you know that's a very extreme example of that. And so you're right. Like, this is not just a black and white issue. There's a lot of little caveats and things that make this unique, and everybody's experience is different. Want to honor that.
Hey, and Tiger King does not reflect our views.
Oh, no, not
at all. I'm not saying we're like promoting it. It's just, no. It's just the world we live in.
For sure. I think, maybe trying to clear that up. Again, if you were to think of the what I mean by unrestrained sexuality, I would say that can be reflected and expressed in so many unique ways. Some that are very obviously bad. I mentioned earlier, unrestrained sexuality, that mindset could lead to the far extreme of horrible behaviors like rape and taking advantage of people and abusing people sexually. And yet there are many people who are living with an unrestrained sexuality mindset that will never do that. And I don't want to just paint that as like, that's exactly where that leads and there's no hope for that. But an unrestrained sexuality would look like this. I have these sexual urges. That's a part of who I am. It's a part of my identity. And it would be wrong to stifle that. And so I get to choose and call the shots on how I express my sexuality, whether that's who I choose to be sexually attracted to, how I act out on those urges, and there's nothing wrong with that. And so if I want to look at pornography, I don't need to care about the people on the other side of the screen or how this affects them, because I'm only concerned about myself. There's no restrictions here, and no one can tell me that my sexual behavior is wrong or should be restrained or contained in any way or follow any sort of guideline. It's I can do what makes me happy. And I think that that's the ultimate goal of that mindset, is just whatever's going to fulfill me sexually and make me feel good is the ultimate good. And then to talk about the other side of the spectrum, this restricted sexuality would say that to experience sex should only, I think this is kind of our caricature of probably what the church has taught about it, is that sex is embarrassing to talk about and should never be spoken of. It's only for a man and his wife, and no one should ever know about it. It's embarrassing and it's shameful to talk about. And it's not even all that fun. It is strictly just to procreate and make babies, and you should never even want to have sex outside of those moments. And that mindset, I think is probably not as common in our culture, yet that's maybe the extreme that we probably assume people mean anytime they talk about having any sort of guidelines or an ethic to sexuality.
Absolutely.
I don't know many people that probably live this out, but I know that many people have been hurt by people that have talked about sex in this way. And I think the damage that comes out of this view is that if you have struggled with sexual tendencies in the past, and I think all of us have, sinned sexually and in some way, small or big. And this mindset, I think, would say that because of that, you're broken beyond repair. You don't deserve to get to enjoy sex in the way God intended. You've basically, you missed your chance. You missed the boat. If you've lost your virginity before marriage, then you don't deserve to get to enjoy a good sex life with your spouse. And that's a lie. God's in the business of restoration. And so...
Well, and it's funny because it does really go back to, you know, starting with the basis of the love podcast of understanding that a loving God doesn't punish us for our mistakes. A loving God, of course, there are going to be consequences and sin. Mm. Man, it always comes with a consequence. There's always a price, but understanding, like, that's exactly why Christ died, was to pay for that and to offer us something else, to offer a different way. And I'm really glad that you touched on that, because I do think, you know, we always swing to one end or the other. Mm-hmm. And it kind of reminds me, I mean, this might sound too simplistic, but even of a conversation about food, where you're like, yeah, we all know that it would be unhealthy to satisfy every desire that we have.
Yeah, to live with no discipline, period. I mean, I struggle with that to begin with.
You know the end if all you eat is Slims. You know exactly what's going to happen. And so you know that you shouldn't do that. You should, as Tad did earlier, have a salad every once in a while. You know? Eat some leaves off the ground. But the other side of that, what would fall into the restricted, is also unhealthy. And that's where you get eating disorders from, where you are restricting your eating because you're so fearful of what's going to happen if you give yourself freedom. And I think that that's a big issue that we have, is we're so afraid almost of this this idea of freedom, that we think like, well, if I'm not on one end of the spectrum, the second I give myself any allowance, I'm going to fly to the other end. I'm going to be eating pancakes at IHOP all day, every day. And that's not reality. Mm-hmm. That's not how things work. And that's obviously not what the Lord intended.
I love that you brought up fear. And then I think that actually is a perfect way to describe that way, that deep down, many of us have this fear about sexuality. And so we're afraid to even understand what God would say about it. And I think the gospel tells us that we don't have to live in fear. We've not been given a spirit of fear. Christ wants to remove the fear from our lives so that we can trust him. And so what I think we see in scripture, and what we can infer from the gospel, and what we learn in all of the instructions regarding sex in the New Testament, as the early church is trying to figure out what are we supposed to do in this area of life as we follow Jesus, I would say kind of the term I would use, and it's going to need some explanation because it involves a word we don't like, but would be submitted sexuality. And what I mean by that is that as believers, Christ has asked us to submit every area of our life to his leadership and his care. He is our king. We give him our loyalty. We are willing to follow him. He is the one who gets to call the shots in every area of our life. And so even our sexuality belongs to Jesus, and we submit the right to do what I want to Jesus, even in that area. There's a woman named Jackie Hill Perry, who I really respect and have read some of her books. In her experience in coming to know Jesus, she was living a homosexual lifestyle, experienced same-sex attraction, and yet through the love and care of some people in a church, she decided to follow Jesus. And she wrote a really good book on that experience called Gay Girl, Good God. I'd highly recommend you reading it. I think both if that's something that maybe you struggle with or you've experienced, her view on it is really helpful. Or if you're a Christian who has no idea how to talk about sexuality and the way different people experience that with homosexuality or heterosexuality, she just has such a good perspective on it. And something she said in there that... my wife and I both read her book, and we talk about is that Jesus doesn't call people to a specific type of sexuality. She says it, Jesus doesn't call people to be straight or to live out a perfect sexuality. He calls people to himself. And that's a really good distinction that she points out is To become a Christian and to follow Jesus doesn't mean that you only adopt his ethic on sexuality. I think for so many people, we get so hung up on a lot of these sexuality things that following Jesus either just becomes trying to stop your addiction to pornography or stop your impure relationships. Jesus isn't calling you to that. That might be a part of it. It might be something he does call you to, but ultimately he's calling you to himself and saying, give me your loyalty, submit all of your life to me. And I think it's important that we start there.
Yeah.
That he calls us to himself and we give him our loyalty.
Absolutely. And I think a great place to begin all of that is really to take it back to the start, because I think we can forget that sexuality isn't a thing that just happened, but that actually it is a created thing that came from our creator. And so really, if you have your Bibles and y'all want to follow along, open up to Genesis 1, and we're going to look at the creation story. It says that God created man in his own image, in the image of God, he created them, and God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Subdue it, have dominion over the fish of the sea, birds of the heavens, every living thing that moves on earth. So we see from that from the very beginning of creation, from the time that God spoke man and woman into being, sexuality was actually a part of his original design for them. And I know, I mean, we're always making jokes about be fruitful and multiply. And I think
it's going to require something, you know.
We throw that around, but the reality is that in order to be fruitful and multiply, sexuality plays a part in that. And I just think it's really important that we are able to look back and to see that the Lord has woven that into our being. We cannot be separated from it. It's not an identity. It's not the most important thing, but it is a part of the people that God created. And not only that, it says that God blessed them. It's a part of the blessing that God gave to his creation. And I think that is really an important part. And I think it's important that we highlight that it's not a mistake or something that was born out of sin. Our twisting of it was born out of sin. But the reality is that God had an intention for this. And it's man that has made it into something different, has made it an obsession, when really it was created to be a blessing.
Yeah, I love that you brought it back to that part in Genesis. I think it's a human thing. It actually, I think God's way and Jesus's way of sexuality is far more human than the other things that we're fed in our culture that are actually very inhuman, if you think about it. It is inhuman for you to give in to every single one of your sexual impulses and to chase that. That's living by instincts. That's like an animal. And we were set apart from the rest of creation to be God's image. We're not supposed to live and be slaves to our instincts like a beast. It's inhuman to actually live that out. And I think many of you, if you would be honest with yourself, you would say, man, like these addictions I have sexually, I don't feel in control. I feel a slave to this instinct and these urges I have. And you don't actually feel like yourself. You don't feel human whenever you live that out. On the other hand, the other ditch, the totally restricted, that's denying a part that God created for humans. Like
Absolutely.
Part of the mandate at the beginning, like you said, is to be fruitful and multiply.
Yeah.
God implied, that's a sexual implication at the very beginning of scripture, that's something that humans are going to be doing, that men and women are going to be sharing. I think that's a, just wanted to point out the humanity of that. And I think
yes.
that Jesus's way is far more close to what the original design for humanity is. And when we live out his way, when we submit our sexuality to him, we actually get to experience a far more human experience.
Yeah.
Though it may still be broken in this world until things are restored. And we have to experience that. But it's a glimmer of light, I think, in the darkness and the fear that we experience about sexuality.
Absolutely. I think, you know, if you would say that we are splitting this idea of submitted sexuality into two like main points, that first point would be just that this idea of our sexuality, but in submission, it is a gift, you know, and it is a good thing from the Lord. And I think a lot of us can feel weird even talking about that. And we almost want to, because we see it as sinful and shameful, we want to separate it from God completely and not even make it a Christian conversation unless we're talking about restriction. Mm-hmm. But that the reality is, man, the first point of submitted sexuality is that our sexuality is a gift from God. Therefore, it's intended for good things. Mm-hmm. And he has given it to us. But Todd, what would you say on that? What do you?
Yeah, I mean, I'd grab onto what you're getting at, like the dignity involved in that. That one, that it's a gift given to us, and there's dignity in that. That God would offer us that. There's dignity in submitting, because I think I know we don't like that word submit, and I keep using that, and it's we don't like it because we live in a culture that says that individual power is the most important thing. That's like the most American ideal. Absolutely. Is that your individual freedom is the most important thing.
Get off my land.
Yeah, get off my land. This is mine. You can't take it from me. And yet Jesus's kingdom is different, in that he calls people to submit to him. And yet to submit implies that you have the choice. Yes. Which is just shocking to me, like, to think about how God has designed this, that he would give us all these blessings. He would give us all these good things, and let us have a free choice on how to use them. And yet, the beauty in saying, hey, if you will submit to that, submit back to me the thing that I gave you in the first place, which he didn't have to even give us the choice. Yeah. And yet he asked for it. It's in that, that when we lay it back down at his feet, when we say, you get to direct on how I use your own gifts, that we, I don't know, that's so dignifying, I think, that God would give us that choice and give us that freedom. And in any other way, actually enslaves us, you know? When we choose to define good and evil on our own terms, we usually end up getting enslaved to our addictions and other powers that that trap us and keep us from enjoying things the way that God would have us.
Yeah, Todd, I really think that this idea of submission, unlike what the world says, ends up being this really powerful statement that we as believers get to make, that we are saying, I am choosing to lay down my will, to lay down my desires in order to choose the Lord's. That takes discipline. It takes trust. It takes love. And it's a hard thing to do. And I think that's why the Lord asks it of us. But there's nothing weak in that form of submission. There's nothing weak in choosing God's will and God's design over what we desire. And I know that none of us have done this perfectly. I think I struggle with submitting to the Lord's will every day. But luckily, we have a really gracious God. And so kind of on that, back on the idea of some of us live in unrestrained sexuality, some live in complete restriction. What would you think that the Lord would say to someone who is potentially living in unrestrained sexuality?
I think Jesus would say to somebody living in unrestrained sexuality, I think he would offer them hope. I think of the story in John's gospel where Jesus encounters a woman at a well, and he doesn't hold back any shots. In the conversation, as you look at it, he actually brings up this woman's sexual sin. He calls her out. He tells her, go bring your husband back here. And she says, I don't have a husband. And he says, oh, actually, you've had many husbands. And the man you're with currently is not your husband. And kind of exposing a little bit of this woman's sexual experience has been all over. She's been unrestrained in that. She's had multiple sexual partners. And we
refer back to Tiger King.
And then the conversation continues, though, and it's so gracious and shows so much of Jesus's kindness, that in this conversation he says, I can offer you water that you'll never thirst again. This well we're at, it uses as a physical example and a metaphor. You have to keep coming back to this well to be quenched. But drink from me, the water I can offer you, you'll never thirst again. And I think underneath the surface of this conversation, he's telling her, you have been chasing after this fulfillment. You have been a slave to your sexual instincts. Maybe even she's been abandoned, and she's experienced a lot of hurt from men sexually. And that's why she's chased from partner to partner for fulfillment and for security sexually. And that's been the area that she has sought to save her, has been a new partner, a new man. And yet Jesus says, that's not ultimately going to fulfill you. That's like this well. You walk to every single day to get another bucket of water, and it never, never satisfies. Mm. But if you will trust in me, I can fulfill you. You're so much more than just your sexual desires. You're so much more than a sexual being. You have a bigger purpose and a bigger identity. And it's cool because you look at the way that that woman is then used. She goes back to her town, and many people believe because of her. That's a significantly bigger calling than finding a sexual partner.
I love that. I love the reminders that in all of this, we can get really obsessed with what's the right answer. But ultimately, the Lord is trying to remind us, like, I created you for so much more. Mm-hmm. But man, if you look at the other side of that, so that was kind of a look into what would the Lord say about unrestrained sexuality. We also have this other side of the legalistic, fearful, restricted sexuality and what the Lord would say to that. And we hit on it earlier when we talked about just the fear that's involved. But I really think that that's what sits at the root of it, is a fear of our sexuality, because we are so afraid that if we make a mistake, we won't have the love of God anymore. We'll be broken. We'll be messy. People won't want us. Tad said it earlier, but yeah, we have these fears of, if I've made a mistake in my sexuality, then I won't be deserving of love. Because ultimately, that's what we're all seeking, is love sits at the base of so much of this. But man, that fear is real. We're afraid of being a disappointment to God. We're afraid of his anger. We're afraid of being on the receiving end of wrath. And so, yes, it's a legitimate fear, but I would also say that it's not true. I would say that it's rooted in a lie from Satan. And I think that that's what the Lord would tell us. He would look at us and say, who told you that? Who told you that I'm going to hate you if you've made a mistake? Who told you that you have to live in this fear and restriction? And that he would say, Satan and your sin doesn't dictate who you are. Your identity is dictated by me, a God who loves you. And I didn't intend for you to be like little robots.
Right.
I didn't make you to be these like lifeless beings. I created you for good. And Tad, I know you said it earlier, but he didn't have to give us a choice, and he did. Mm-hmm. He has given us freedom. And I think that, man, the Lord wants to remind you of that. But in that freedom, you have the freedom to choose him. And he doesn't want to force you, but we get to freely submit ourselves to him out of faith and love, not out of fear.
If you think about the early followers of Jesus, and if you read through the scriptures, so many of them, it's shocking how many people who had been condemned and shamed for their sexual sins end up being some of his earliest followers.
Yeah.
Many former prostitutes followed Jesus and had their lives changed by his grace. I think if the woman at the well story kind of captures the what Jesus would say to a person living just an unrestrained sexuality, a moment we might look at where Jesus responds to people living this restricted, legalistic version of his, whenever it's in John 8 that a group of religious leaders bring a woman who was caught in the act of adultery to Jesus, and they throw him at his feet and say, the law commands we stone a person who is caught in adultery. And Jesus responds and says, okay, well then the person who has never sinned, be the first to cast a stone. And it says, it's amazing. One by one, they all walk away. And all that's left is this woman at Jesus' feet. And he, rather than shaming her, rather than saying, you know what, I've actually never sinned, so I'm going to be the first to throw the stone, get ready, you know, he bends down and he says, has no one condemned you? Neither do I. Go and sin no more. He doesn't shame her and condemn her. He empowers her and frees her to have a changed life, to say, no longer chase after these affairs, this adultery. Don't find your fulfillment in that. Let my grace fulfill you. And she probably went on to join his early crew of disciples and became maybe a future leader in the early church, which is just amazing, the grace and redemption that Jesus brings to that. And all those people who have that restricted view of sexuality, the men that brought her to Jesus and said, look, we caught her in the act. She's a failure. We should kill her. Jesus responds to them and says, you've missed sight of the fact that, like, in so restricting this and having so much legalism about this, you've forgotten the fact that you sin in so many other ways. And this is not the end all be all thing that you've just suddenly been perfect at because you've avoided this type of sin the way that she did. You're not a, like, I don't know, you're not a robot, you know, like you've sinned too, and you're just as much in need of grace.
Man, that story is such a good picture of how crazy humans are too. Yeah. They like catch this person sitting and they're like, oh, we
got
to kill
her.
We got
one.
Let's put her down. She shouldn't live anymore. But no, I think it's cool that the idea here is that we don't live in a restriction in order to avoid wrath. It's not about limiting ourselves so that we don't get in trouble, but it's actually that we submit in order to receive Jesus. Oh, right. And you see that all through scripture that, man, all of these are a submission in order to not get less of something bad, but to actually get more of something good. We submit so that we can have more of Jesus. We can experience more of him because, man, sin and Christ are in opposition. And so if I am walking in tons of sin, I'm going to have less of Jesus. But the more I submit, the more I'm able to receive of him. And that's so exciting.
And he calls you to himself. It's funny you bring up just the funniness of people in that, of like, the problem with a person living the unrestrained sexuality is that they're only thinking about self. How can I gratify my desires?
Yeah.
And then if you think about even just from that story, the way that people living this restricted sexuality, they're thinking about others, but in a negative way. They're thinking about all the ways other people screw up and sin sexually, and not looking at the ways that they've sinned. Whereas that central point, the submission to Jesus, the eyes are not focused strictly on self or strictly on others' failures. It's focused on Jesus and his grace that he offers. And I think that's another just crucial difference.
Absolutely. Man, well, in another attempt to not lose all of our listeners to the tweets out there or the TikToks, but we've been talking a lot about some abstract ideas, and abstract is fun, but typically I'm in the camp of needing super concrete and applicable to help me understand how to live a changed life. So, Todd, will you just walk us through, like, what is some real world, real life application for how we actually do this, how we actually live submitted to the Lord?
Yeah. I think one would be starting with the way we speak about sexuality, that we would speak about it in a godly way, that we wouldn't, that we wouldn't misrepresent what Jesus says about it, either in a way that makes it where it says, yeah, you can just do whatever you want. You do you. I think that's just a phrase that as believers we shouldn't use, especially in regard to this, but no, we follow Jesus. We also shouldn't shame people. We shouldn't try to restrict other people's sexuality in a way that fits with our view but misrepresents Jesus and his grace. And so I think we should just point people to Jesus and recognize that he had a plan for it. A basic one one that I think sounds outdated to say, but God's plan for sexuality, as presented in scriptures, is that sex would be a special thing reserved for those sharing a covenant of marriage, a man and a woman who have been joined in a covenant of loyalty to one another that is not to be broken, and that sex is something reserved for that space as a way to connect and express intimacy between a man and a wife. So to that, though, just placing myself back, especially in high school, I had such an idolized view of sex.
Yeah.
And while I tried as a high school guy to reserve sex for marriage and to not give in to opportunities to do that before, I still idolized sex. And so I made excuses for myself to experience it in other ways, such as pornography or asking the questions like, man, like, well, how far is too far? And I think that me asking even that question was a mistake. And that does not, like, asking how far is too far is the opposite of a heart submitted to Christ, because it's still trying to maintain power and control over your own life.
Absolutely. I think two more that we could just look at is, man, this idea of not giving in to every impulse of our flesh. Again, we talked about it, like, with food earlier, or even, you know, it's unhealthy to get on Instagram every single time that you have the desire to get on Instagram. You never get anything else done. It is so similar that we weren't created to just satisfy every impulse that our flesh has. And we see, man, addiction is so born out of that. If we do that, we know that the end is this obsession. And that's where pornography addiction comes from, and abuse, all of those things. And so a big one is to train yourself to say no to those things. That's not a bad thing to say no. It's actually a really healthy exercise in all of life to deny maybe a quote unquote craving that you have at different times that is healthy for us. And the Lord has given us a choice to say no. And so, yeah, a big one is not giving in to every impulse. And man, the last one is letting God decide and direct your sexuality. I would say a lot of us don't want that. We hate the idea of someone else making a choice for us. And I would actually tell you that that's not someone else making a choice. It's called obedience. And that is the idea of this submitted sexuality, is saying, I'm going to trust God's design, God's plan, God's will over what I think feels right in the moment, over the thing that I most desire or most want. And I'm going to trust that that is a good thing. I'm going to trust that God knows better than I do. And so I'm going to step aside and I'm going to let him direct me here. Well, this has been a heavy topic, and I know it's something that a lot of us probably don't want to talk about. A lot of us don't want to think about. Everybody's kind of in a different space with all of this. But I think it really, it comes down to one thing. And that is, are you following Jesus or are you following your flesh? You know, in Matthew 16, Jesus is talking to his disciples, and he's talking about what it takes to truly follow him. And he says, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. And I think that that is really the point. He goes on later to say, man, what is the profit if you gain the world, but you lose your soul? And I think that all of this conversation really comes down to that idea of, man, are we willing to say no to the things of the flesh? Are we willing to say no to sin and to take up our cross, to take up these burdens and follow after Jesus? And it's not easy. You know, he uses this imagery of the cross and of denial because it's not an easy thing, but it's worth it. And I think it's so important that we remember that God is, he's asking us to do all of this out of love and out of protection for us, that he wants to guard this great gift that he's given us, but it does come with a certain set of instructions. And he's really specific about that. And it's hard. We don't want it to be specific, but the truth is he's saying, man, if you love me, Then you'll follow me.
Something though that Clark Nolan, one of the pastors at Fellowship Fayetteville, says often is, it's not about perfection, it's about direction. And I think that that'd be kind of my final comment, would just be, this feels so weighty, and like, man, how can I just change everything right now? I've been doing this wrong. And maybe you're feeling that conviction. You don't have to be perfect tomorrow.
No.
Jesus is going to make you perfect. He will see you to your end in your perfection and your wholeness. And yet the first thing that you need to do if you're not submitting your sexuality to him is take that first step and change your direction. Again, many of Jesus' followers, his disciples, as we read through the New Testament, were just messed up and straight out of sin. And they were broken, and they had past, like many of us. Yet their direction changed and they followed Jesus, and we can do the same.
So yeah, if you are confused, you have questions, don't feel afraid to talk to somebody. It doesn't have to be an awkward conversation. All of us have had questions and all of us have to work through this. So, man, talk to your cell group leader, talk to a staff person, talk to your parents. Have those conversations so that it doesn't feel like a shameful thing and you're able to talk about it. And then, ultimately know that the God who's asking this of you is a good God who loves you and who intends good for your lives. And that is the bottom line. So FSM, we really miss you.
Yeah, we miss you a lot. And we can't wait to see you again. Hopefully you found this helpful. And again, send us any questions you've got.